This month, The Spectator becomes the first magazine in history to print 10,000 issues, and we'd like to celebrate with you. Subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for just £12. Plus, we'll send you a bottle of commemorative Spectator gin, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/celebrate.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. So this morning the government woke up to the worst set of front pages it's had since this crisis began, with even traditionally friendly papers calling the government's approach to testing a fiasco or shambolic. That may be why, after spending a week in isolation, the Health Secretary Matt Hancock spent an hour and a half answering journalists' questions in the daily briefing today. James, do you think it was enough to quell the criticisms?
Yesterday's press conference was a ramble with no clear communication strategy behind it. Today's was very different. There was a big headline announcement, the ambition to get up to 100,000 tests by the end of this month, by the end of April. And then I thought you could also see there was another kind of news line chucked in there when Hancock waded in with kind of glee to the question of whether Premiership footballers should take a pay cut. But then there was also something else done well, which is kind of in a time when everyone was a tammy go at the government pervading scrutiny, he allowed follow-up questions from the journalists who were obviously in this era of social distancing questioning him remotely, which, again, even if he wasn't really answering the question, makes it look like he's answering the question. He then took far more questions than had been taken at any of these previous press conferences. Again, it makes you look like you're confident and on top of your brief, regardless of the reality of that or not. I think the big question now is whether they can hit this 100,000 tests by the end of this month. And I also think kind of how fast do they get there? Because I think this testing question isn't going to go away, because I think one of the things we saw with that 850,000 more people than usual claiming universal credit in the past fortnight is that if this crisis is not going to do irreparable economic damage, the government needs an exit strategy. And I think what the pressure on the government on testing is about, how do you intend to get out of this so that people can get back to some kind of normality?
Now, Katie, one of the criticisms has been that if the government is facing difficulties, for example, in sourcing chemicals or sourcing swabs, then they should at least level with the public about what the challenges are. Do you think he did that in this press conference?
Well, he began by saying that he was going to level the country. It doesn't necessarily mean a politician is going to do what they say, but it was quite clear that the entire exercise, in a way, was aimed at doing this, at trying to explain, after lots of criticism that the government wasn't explaining why it hasn't done enough testing, trying to explain that why that was. And I think it was clear, we'd heard previously, and we talked about in this podcast, the idea that when you speak to people in government, one of the things that they pointed out is that comparisons to Germany can be unfair, because if you look at the industries that Germany has on its doorstep, you know, within the country, they're actually very well predisposed to actually all these chemicals you need, to chemical agents, to getting ready for these tests. And the UK doesn't have that. Now, some people said, well, why doesn't anyone on the record say this? And Matt Hancock did say this today. So I think he gave quite a full explanation of some of the difficulties the UK government is having. And now I think ultimately there's a question, which is, are the government going to be criticised for just not having answers? Because Matt Hancock ultimately admitted that lots of these tasks are very difficult and there just aren't easy answers right now to some of the things that are being asked of them. Or is it the case that because they have now given a on-the-record comprehensive explanation of where they have got to with things, that people will cut them some slack? It's interesting that all the polling so far, and obviously that can change, suggests that the general public, or at least a large chunk of it, is willing to bear with the government as they try and deal with all these difficult tasks. So I think that was clearly the aim of this conference, and the initial reaction, and clearly Twitter is not the country, is that I think this is a much better rated press conference than the one yesterday for several reasons. And you got the impression that Matt Hancock, not just because he was so keen to talk for such a long period of time, perhaps after getting out of self-isolation and feels that he has making up to do. I think it was also interesting, just on a financial level, that one of the things that he announced was the idea that historic NHS debt has been written off. So 13.4 billion, the idea being that this means that health trust can now focus on dealing with coronavirus.
there was quite a lot of Matt Hancock channeling George Osborne, channeling Tony Blair. You know, but I get it. The kind of the slides into the democracy, all those things. You know, I think compared to yesterday, it was just a much more polished performance. It had a strategy behind it, which wasn't a kind of purely defensive, can we get out of here without getting pinned down or anything. It was a reminder, in a way, that the difference between the more political members of the cabinet and the less political members of the cabinet.
And I think one of the things with these daily press conferences is the public demanded them. There was huge pressure on the government to bring about daily press conferences after, I think it was a weekend where there'd been mixed messaging in terms of the government response, reports in some papers, some source quotes about plans to cocoon some of the population. And there was pressure and several people calling for it in terms of having a daily press conference. I think the government had been considering something like this anyway when things sped up, but it was brought into plan perhaps sooner than they had originally planned. And I think what this week has served as a reminder of is the daily press conference ultimately can be a very good thing, but ultimately you need to have something you want to say. Otherwise it can just look a bit as though you're batting away questions. So I do think that after the difficulties of yesterday, there's a clearer focus on actually who's saying what is the point of this address to the nation? Because otherwise I think that if you have a minister who treats it like a Sunday interview where ultimately they're trying to just get through it and off without creating any news, that's not what these press conferences are about. And I think there's a difference there that I think is now being grasped.
Mm. And James, one other person that people have said Matt Hancock was challenging was Gordon Brown with his five-pillar strategy. Can you tell us about what those pillars are?
The pillars are basically about the different forms of testing so you get to the 100,000 testing point. I think one of the interesting questions of one of them is they are basically going to do this antibody test, which tells you who has the virus, and basically try and use a sample of the population so that they can work out how many people have already had it in rough terms. And there is a big question here, because there is a kind of raging scientific debate about how many people have had it. Now, obviously, if you're in a situation where over half the population have had it, we're in a very different place than if 5% of the population have had it. I think that is something that is going to come on. I think the other thing which is going to be an issue in time to come is this talk of a kind of immunity certificate for those who have had the virus. That is going to create some very complex moral issues, because obviously anyone who has had the virus can essentially return to life as normal and has a massive head start in the jobs market. And that could be really relevant if this lockdown goes on for quite a while, unemployment soars, people will feel very resentful if we get into a situation where some people, because they've had the virus, can kind of go out there and get first dibs as new jobs open up. I mean, I think I don't see any way round the immunity certificate issue, but it's not going to be politically uncomplicated.
Yeah, and I think there's also potentially a public health issue there, in the sense that, as James says, it will seem as though people are getting unfair opportunities if they have this certificate because they've had the illness and you haven't. And I would suspect that perhaps probably not those in so much the vulnerable groups, but, you know, people who see themselves as fit in their 20s and 30s, I think might just come to the conclusion that they're better just trying to get the virus so then they can then return to normal life. And that might sound funny, but ultimately people will want to return to some type of normality, and they want to also be able to earn a living. So I think there are complications in terms of how you roll that out while sending the right message of, you know, the fact that you have to suppress, mitigate, and whichever the government is doing at that point.
And Katie, two of those five pillars involved cooperation from private firms, whether that's firms like Amazon and Boots or pharmaceutical companies, in ramping up testing. Do you think that is enough to address criticisms that they haven't ramped up testing enough, or does that just beg the question of why haven't they done this sooner?
I think the government is going to continued to be criticised for the lack of testing compared to certain countries, particularly Germany. There are some countries in Europe where I think the UK is ahead, but there's definitely several who are ahead of the UK. I think the beginning of them working with certain private sector companies will to some and probably is in a way a sign that they could have done some of this stuff sooner. So it's not just that German industry was on their doorstep. There are companies that the UK government could have worked with. But I do think a lot of this comes down to a bandwidth issue. And ultimately, and you heard the Deputy Chief Medical Officer say this last night, I think in an interview on the Paston show, which is ultimately that the priority from the UK government and Public Health England perspective is still the idea of social distancing. So stay at home, save lives, slogan they want to keep saying. And they see that as the primary focus and testing as secondary. Now, testing is incredibly important because, as James says, it's the clearest way that we can imagine of getting to some type of exit strategy. But given that the next 2 to 3 weeks, we're expecting to see the highest death toll from the outbreak, I think that it's still the case that if the government had to choose one to focus on, they would be choosing the former. That doesn't mean they're not going to be criticised for not having the bandwidth to do both to the required degree.
And James, you mentioned earlier on the podcast about this record level of people claiming universal credit. Can you tell us what's going on there?
Well, I think that this is just a sign of the economic costs of this virus. You might have thought that the government's kind of furlough scheme, where the state would pledge to pick up, you know, 80% of the wages of the private sector workers, would have limited unemployment. But it is quite clear that this lockdown has had such a devastating effect on the economy that you've got 850,000 more people claiming universal credit than you would normally expect in a fortnight. And I think the growing view in Whitehall is there is a real danger that if you end up with these restrictions in place for, say, 4 months or so, how high is unemployment going to be at that point, and how much of an economy will there be left at the end of that? And that, I think, is why there is such urgency about finding some kind of exit strategy from the current situation, because it is clearly not sustainable in the medium term.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And if you'd like to hear more about the economic costs of coronavirus, why not check out this week's The Edition podcast, where I speak to our economics correspondent, Kate Andrews, as well as the former FT editor, Lionel Barber, about coronomics. That episode will be released on Thursday evening, and to find it, just search for The Edition wherever you get your podcasts from. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow.